Click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.
Just a bit outside.
Fritz down the floor, jams it. Ho-ho.
Can you do this for me? Every single game, can you do this? Coach, not only will I do it for you, yes, I'll do it for you.
Do it.
Welcome to the Count Pointer Count pregame show. Now, the host of Count Pointer Count, Brother J-Dub.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Count Pointer Count pregame show for this week. I am Brother J-Dub, and we've got a big show for you today. We've got Tom Abbott from the Golf Channel talking about Carnoustie and Sergio Garcia's big choke at the Open Championships. We've also got John Wilkerson and John Nelson talking about ACC Media Days up in Pinehurst, my neck of the woods. We'll talk about that, and as always, we'll bring Nelly back in for the pregame tease. But first, Mike Blakeney. What time is it right now?
It's time for the recap rant of the week.
And one thing that you need to take away from Brian Urlacher, his cell phone.
Now what?
Probably more than just one thing, but go on.
Let's see. Quoting Mark Conkle's article from the Chicago Sun-Times, quote, "Go to hell, you f***ing bitch. Grow the f*** up and quit praying and get a job."
Can we say that on the radio?
J-Dub's bleeping as we go. Be careful. You're a f***ing fruitcake, and you're raising a little Those are text messages Tina Robertson says she got from her 2-year-old son's famous father, Brian Urlacher. Robertson claims Urlacher sent her more than 30 nasty text messages since January.
Isn't that what he says on the bottom of a pile?
Yes. Robertson, a former exotic dancer who's been accused of shaking down men for money, has had court trouble with another famous man in the past. She once dated Lord of the Dance star Michael Flatley.
Okay, how many times will you ever get to use Brian Urlacher and Michael Flatley in the same sentence?
In 2003, she accused Flatley of raping her in Las Vegas, sued him for $35 million. That case was tossed out of court. Flatley, who said the sex was consensual, countersued Robertson and the lawyer.
Isn't it always?
Yes.
But was he standing on his tiptoes when he did it?
Yes. Apparently, he's suing her for $100 million. The case is still pending. So, here's a list of the text messages that she has sent, she has received from Brian Urlacher, and here's your most colorful ones. Go to hell, you f***ing bitch. I was sick. F*** you. Shut up. You're an idiot. I'll do it myself next time he comes to stay with me. You're a f***ing fruitcake. Why the hell would you come down here? You know I'm busy. You always got to be in the middle of You're f***ing nuts. I just got done with a long season of work. You wouldn't know what that's like, so I'm taking time off. Go to hell. I'll be there when I get there. You're one jealous bitch. Quit threatening me. You got no pull in court. The January 23rd message, it said f*** you. Here's the follow-up, February 21st. FYI, f*** you.
All right, getting to the point here with this.
Yeah.
Why would Urlacher be stupid enough to get involved with somebody like that in the first place?
F*** off, Hooker. I don't have time for you.
Because he's a professional athlete.
And that's what professional athletes do.
They date spinners.
I know.
2 minutes later. That right, bitch.
And that, folks, was our pregame recap rant of the week. Coming up next here on the pregame show, Tom Abbott of the Golf Channel is here to talk about Carnoustie and why Irish eyes are smiling. You're listening to the Count Pointer Count pregame show on the World Internet Radio Network, OSG Sports Radio, and Podomatic.com. Stay tuned.
Warning, this contains explicit material not suitable for children.
He's just going to do, hi, I'm Corey Kessler, I'm God's gift to women, and you're listening to OST Sports Radio or something like that.
Hello, I'm Corey Kessler. We're in hoops heaven, everybody. You're listening to OSG Sports Radio. Tune in to Johnny Nelson every week.
Count Pointer Count.
Oh, you got to admit, that is pretty neat. The Dragons won!
B-Block now on the pregame show, and as always, the B-Block stands for Blakeney, www.MikeBlakeney, B-L-A-K-E-N-E-Y.com. He's a riddle for you because he belongs to us, and of course, the B-Block means, you know, Tom, I can't think of anything that goes with B other, you know, help me out here. We're talking golf. Oh, British. Duh. Okay. The Open Championship. I'm not supposed to refer to it as such. The British, anyway. The Open Championship, have you ever, as you talk to us from Carnoustie, have you ever been a part of a wackier event than this?
Well, it was absolutely unbelievable, wasn't it? I mean, anybody could have won. If, you know, Ernie Els had a chance to win, Steve Stricker could have won. It was quite amazing. Sergio Garcia was in there. Andres Romero, the young Argentinian, was making birdies out of the wazoo. I think he had 7 birdies in the space of 9 holes. it was just, it was unbelievable. And then Padraig Harrington came through and won a finish. Another playoff for Carnoustie. It was absolutely brilliant. And I tell you what, I think Carnoustie deserved that kind of Open Championship, having had the problems in 99 and the Carnoustie label that was put on them. I think that the tournament and the golf course deserved a championship of that magnitude, and it was all credit to what a great golf course.
Now, are we giving Harrington too much blame, or are we giving Garcia too much credit for a collapse against a major? Which way does this fall?
I think you've got to say that Sergio Garcia is going to be very, very disappointed. I mean, he was leading this golf, it was his golf tournament going into that final round. And everybody was saying, Garcia's going to win this thing, and he's going to come through, and he's going to take the victory, and this is going to be great for him. He deserves it. He's a great player. And I was getting some interviews with players, with Garcia playing about 5 or 6 holes, and we were getting interviews with players talking about Garcia and how much of a great player he is and what a victory would mean to him and things along those lines. And so you've really got to think that this is a Garcia tournament that he threw away. I mean, he was leading this golf tournament going into the final round. He had it in his grasp, and he didn't win, and he lost it in a playoff. I think you put a little bit of blame on Garcia, but you can never take it away from Harrington. The lowest score at the end of the tournament wins, and that's what he had.
Tom Abbott with the Golf Channel with us from Carnoustie, wrapping up the British. And when you look at Garcia, was there a discernible difference in demeanor, approach, game in his first 63 holes and then in the final 13? Or was it just, okay, it's round 4 and therefore Sergio will lose?
I think there was definitely a change in Garcia's demeanor on that final day. I mean, right from the word go. If you look at the first 3 rounds, he was the swashbuckling, as they say, Spaniard. He would come out and he was shouting and he was striding along the fairway. And when he came out on the final day, I watched him put on the putting green, he was warming up. He was evidently nervous. He didn't have that same demeanor. And he was just bumpy and edgy over the. And so I think he had changed over those first, from the first 3 days until the final day. And maybe that was the difference. Maybe he just the pressure got to him a little too much. I mean, to be able to come back to the field as he did, and he didn't go ahead and win it like a Tiger Woods. You know, if Tiger Woods is leading the way by a couple going into the final round, it'd be far ahead come day then, and that wasn't the case on Sunday.
When you have an Irishman like a Padraig Harrington win it, I think it's the second time in 60 some odd years that an Irishman has won, Fred Bailey winning it before. What does it mean to have someone from, whether it's Ireland, Scotland, Wales, England, what have you, if you want to call it a local, what's it like to have a local, and I'll put that word in quotes, win the Open Championship and be the champion golfer of the year?
Well, it's brilliant. I think for this part of the world, you had it when Paul Laurie won in Scotland. The Paul Laurie victory was obviously shadowed by the events with Jean van der Velde. I think his win will always be a little bit tainted because of that. But it was wonderful for Harrington, and the Irish were really celebrating on the 18th green with chaps dressed up in Irish wigs and flags everywhere and people sort of celebrating. And yesterday evening when I walked back to the clubhouse, having done our show in the evening, I walked back maybe around 9 or 10 o'clock, and there was a real party going on in the bar at the Carnoustie Golf Course Hotel. So I think it's wonderful for the British game. Well, not just the British game, the Irish game and the European game. I think we had so many questions being asked before this tournament. When was the Europe win? And when was when was this sort of going to be broken by the Europeans? And so that has been lifted now, and the Europeans have grabbed a major championship that they so deserve, because when you look at the Ryder Cups and the way that people like Harrington perform in the Ryder Cups, people say, well, these guys are just incredible when you play Ryder Cup, but then when you come to a major championship, they can't get it.
Last question for you before we let you kind of enjoy things for a couple of days. The second of 3 tournaments rolling through, do they call the Senior British the Senior British, or is it the Senior Open? Heading to Muirfield, Nick Faldo's debut. Give me a primer.
Looking ahead to the to Muirfield, I think it's going to be a good week. I mean, it's not going to have the same appeal, of course, as this tournament, the Carnoustie. But it's still a very, very important tournament for the seniors. I think Nick Faldo is going to be in the limelight, obviously, having turned 50 last week, and this is his first tournament in the senior game. He won the Open Championship and parred every hole in that last round to take the claret jug. And so it's a special place for Nick Faldo, and it's going to be special for people to come out and see him compete once again on a level where he is, you know, he's on level pegging with the other players. He has a chance to win again. Whether he will or not, I don't know. I really don't think that he's played enough golf to be able to compete with these senior players that are very, very sharp, especially the guys coming over from the United States. Lon Roberts, obviously defending champion. I think he's got to be one of the favorites. They're sharp. They're ready to play. And it's going to be a good golf tournament, but obviously it's not going to have the same kind of appeal as Carnoustie. And I don't really think it's going to have the same as the Women's British Open, which is the following week at St. Andrews. But it's still a golf tournament, and it really depends on the weather. I'm looking out of the window right now, and there is blue skies, but some ominous clouds, and it's a little bit breezy. So it's really going to depend on the weather as to what happens at Muirfield. When we look back at the Open Championship, we remember Saturday there in 2002, when it was just absolutely disastrous to be out on the golf course. So if it gets windy and breezy, it's anybody's golf tournament.
Tom Abbott of the Golf Channel, thanks for hanging out with us. We'll catch up with you on Sunday, kind of talking a little senior men's British, and we'll preview the women's British. Have fun over there, my friend. We'll catch up with you down the line. Tom Abbott of the Golf Channel, thanks as always. When we come back, it'll be J-Dub's Corner, which means J-Dub will run the show. John Wilkerson catching up from ACC Media Days, and we'll figure out whether or not Media Days are spelled with D-A-Y-S or D-A-Z-E. And I'll join in for my two cents when it comes to ACC football. All that when the pregame show continues on Count, Pointer Count, OSG Sports Radio on the World Internet Radio Network and Podomatic.com.
I'm rocking the suburbs, just like Quiet Riot did.
Count Pointer Count.
This is your man Cabby on the street from the Score Television Network, coming at you live on OSG Sports Radio. I'm with my man John Nelson. Do not turn that dial. It's one of the baddest teams in the country on the audio tip, and he's pretty good in the strip club.
And that's the bottom line. Just don't go sip so.
You see, we're on a mission from God.
Count Pointer Count on the World Internet Radio Network and Podomatic.com. Now, back to Count Pointer Count on OSG Sports Radio.
After several weeks off, welcome back to J-Dub's Corner here in the Count Pointer Count pregame show on OSG Sports Radio, the World Internet Radio Network, and Podomatic.com. I am still Brother J-Dub. Joining me here in the corner today, got Nelly and we got Wilkie. Wilkie is a special guest up in my neck of the woods hanging out in Pinehurst. Wilkie, what's going on, my friend?
Not much, man. Just hanging out here at the ACC football kickoff and getting ready for football season.
And Nelly, welcome in for your first time here in the corner.
But yeah, it's my first time here in the corner, but as people will be listening on this week's show, I think I appear like 95 different times, so I feel like I have a stamp on every segment this week.
This is definitely...
You're everywhere, pal.
It's the Nelson and Vic show this week. Thank you very much.
Seven and John.
It's the new drink.
Careful.
Seven and Nelly. There you go. But the reason we're bringing these guys in together today, we're going to talk about the ACC Media Day that Wilkie just happened to be up here at Pinehurst for. And Wilkie, what were your first impressions of Media Day today?
It was pretty good. Today we interviewed the players at Media Day and got some interesting answers and so forth. It's really interesting to see. One of the questions we asked today was to the players, what stadium on the road do you guys enjoy going to? And it seems like Boston College has become like the favorite road trip among the ACC schools because the crowd has become so, very on the visiting team. They have a very colorful language, which is kind of new to the ACC scene. So it was really interesting to hear that how Alumni Stadium Boston College has become like a pit now in ACC football. I was expecting to hear Tallahassee. I was expecting to hear Clemson. We got those answers. But Boston College was a pleasant surprise.
I guess people in the ACC aren't used to having fans that are wicked hardcore.
Or some of the language that they hear. I mean, come on, Northeasterners are known for their harsh language.
Well, having played in Doak Campbell and having played in Death Valley, those are both fantastic stadiums to go into. I mean, you walk into Death Valley and there's nothing but a sea of orange and white, and you go down to Doak Campbell, nothing but a sea of scarlet and gold, John.
Garnet, get it right.
Garnet and gold. I was close. Red and a yellowish color.
Gee, thanks.
I'm old gold, so what's the difference? At Wake, but I mean, there are lots of good stadiums in the ACC to play in, and Chestnut Hill, just from looking, I've never been up there, but it looks like it's a pretty intense place to play because the fans are right on you. So I can see how that would be kind of a player favorite because you get that fan interaction, even with the language. You're like, hey, I came here to play a football game and I learned some new words, so take them home and use them down in Chapel Hill. See what we can do. But
It's a small, intimate stadium, and it's really made an impression on the league.
Obviously, you get together today, and they start picking people for who they believe is going to be the leader of the Atlantic Division, the Coastal Division. Any surprises as far as who's been picked to lead the divisions this year in the ACC?
Well, I can only tell you what I picked because the results haven't come out yet. They'll come out tomorrow.
Well, but you're the only one that's important anyway, so
exactly.
That's all that matters.
Exactly. Who cares about Swofford right now? Come on.
He's the man. I really like Boston College to win the Atlantic and in the Coastal Virginia Tech. And I have Virginia Tech winning the ACC championship game. And those, to me, are the two complete teams in the ACC.
Now, not just to be a homer here, you look at a team like Wake Forest. Wake Forest has 23 players coming back. Are you saying that last season was just a fluke?
I wouldn't. No, they're not a fluke. In fact, I've got them finished second. But I just think BC and Virginia Tech are probably the two best teams. Here's the thing, though, with Virginia Tech. They got to settle on their quarterback. Sean Glennon's got to come to the table and play much better. In other words, Ike Whitaker is right there to take that job away if that happens. Virginia Tech's got to get some sort of good quarterback play, and that's the wild card as far as Wake Forest, because Wake Forest could sneak in there and be the team again. Boston College, to me, is probably the most complete. Is the most complete team in the ACC. They've got the best quarterback right now in the ACC. I know Riley Skinner, J-Dub, won the conference last year, and he's a pretty good quarterback. But you're talking about a senior, 3-year starter that is high on a lot of people's lists. And let's face it, the ACC doesn't have a whole lot of good quality quarterbacks this year. Really, Matt Ryan is about the only one, and Riley Skinner about the only two that have proven anything.
You talk about Riley Skinner. I'm still really not sold on him. I mean, yeah, he was a freshman last year. He had a lot of good things happen to him. And you can't look at a guy – I mean, he's not a prodigy. I mean, he's a good, solid quarterback. He's in the mold of a – he's a possession quarterback. He doesn't turn the ball over a whole lot. He's not going to do a lot of things to – lose a ball game for you, but he's not the kind of guy, in my opinion, yet that will take a team over a hump. So I'm not upset at you for saying Riley's not the end all be all quarterback, because he will be a really good quarterback for Wake. But I will say Matt Ryan, in my opinion as well, is one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
All Riley does is win, though, and yeah, that's what you want your quarterback to do.
You'll never hear me complain. But you look at Georgia Tech and the Coastal, post Reggie Ball, post Calvin Johnson. What have you heard about that team? I mean, how is Chan Gailey going to move this team forward?
It's interesting you say that, because I had a brief conversation with Chan tonight. He's really excited about his team. He really feels good about this team, and he really feels good about that offense. And I can tell he's very confident in the quarterback position. I think Taylor Bennett and his play in the Gator Bowl will go a long way toward this year. And, Tech, I've got them finishing pretty high. I don't have them winning the division, but I really think they're going to have a nice 8-win season, 9-win season, and get a good bowl.
Nelly, what's your feeling about the Yellow Jackets? You think they're going to do as well as Wilkie says they're going to?
I think that any quarterback that they put under center that won't consistently degrade like Reggie Ball did the more he spent time under center, like Georgia Tech had the last 4 years, I think you can't do anything but go up. I mean, it was one of those situations like where like Reggie Ballett just reminded me of Chris Rich. You had two quarterbacks whose learning curve turned out to be like a plunger in a toilet over 4 years. It was just bad. The older they got, the worse they got. So I think anything at Georgia Tech is an improvement.
Now, Wilkie's got Boston College winning the Atlantic, and he's got Virginia Tech winning the Coastal with the Hokies winning the whole thing. Now, the one team I think everyone who follows the ACC is looking at are the Tar Heels in North Carolina. Wilkie, what kind of sense are you getting in Pinehurst that Butch Davis is bringing? What kind of energy is he bringing to this team, and where do you have them finishing in the Coastal?
You know, I've got them, like, I believe, third in the Coastal. I don't want to play North Carolina in October, November, because that team, as they get to know each other, as they get to know Butch's system, I think is going to be they're going to win six games this year and make a bowl. And then after that, I think they're going to probably be one of the better teams in that division. You're talking about a first-class coach in Butch Davis, and this guy can coach defense. And when you think, look at that, you got Marvin Austin to come to Chapel Hill, the number one defensive player in the country last year. I just think they're off to a great start, and I really believe in October, November, they'll start gelling. I'm not going to say they're going to be the surprise team and come out of nowhere and win a division, but a 6-win season I think would be a major accomplishment and get the Butch Davis Express rolling there in Chapel Hill.
Well, Nelly, obviously Wilkie's got another new coach, Jeff Jagodzinski, taking the Boston College to win the Atlantic. What do you think new coach Tom O'Brien's going to be doing at NC State since he replaced your godfather, Chuck Amato, at NC State? What's going on with him?
Well, I honestly think that OB will give them the personality infusion that they've been looking for on campus. You know, I try to deliver the punchline, and no one gives me the courtesy laugh.
Our bad.
Yeah, thank you. You guys had my back until this show. I mean, Coach OB is just a matter-of-fact kind of a guy. He's going to go in there, and I think it's going to just depend on how quickly they can adjust to him and his systems and all of his mannerisms and getting used to having a new guy there, because there's always that kind of transition element. And they might be able to jump on them earlier in the year than later. So if you're going to look for upsets against the team that he's a coach for, look for the earlier, not for the later, when they finally get into some kind of a rhythm. So I think they'll finish strong if they start off weaker than people think they normally would.
Well, I don't think there are any surprises in my mind this year in the ACC. I've got, you know, in my mind, the Atlantic Division's coming down to Wake Forest and BC just because of the talent they've got. I've got BC winning out. And actually, the Coastal Division, I had Tech. I think Tech's going to take the Coastal this year. Just my opinion on, I just like Bennett. I think Bennett's a nice young quarterback. They've got some dark horse players on that team. And I think Georgia Tech is going to be the dark horse come out of the Coastal. You may not agree, but that's my opinion. So
I can see Georgia Tech being a dark horse and winning that division because they still have some talent there. And in my brief conversation with Chan today, he's really excited about this team. So they could be that special team that goes to Jacksonville.
And I'm saving all my opinions for the OSG CBC CFB pregame preview that we're having in a couple of weeks. So I guess that's the short version.
Second week of August, we're going to break down, you know, the ACC, the SEC, and all the dreaded other conferences around here. So stay tuned to OSG Sports Radio the second week of August. When I take a much-needed R&R vacation, we're going to make sure we put that show on there for you. But we got Wilkie, we got Nelly, and we've got the ACC. So, Wilkie, have fun the rest of your time here in Pinehurst, up in my neck of the woods, and I enjoy playing Pinehurst 8 tomorrow while we're sitting here being jealous of you.
I sure will. Nothing like a Monday morning at Pinehurst number 8.
Whatever.
Nelly, don't go anywhere because we're going to need you the rest of the show.
Yeah, no doubt.
You're listening to the Count Point Account pregame show in J-Dub's Corner. It's time to close the door, wipe your feet, and put your shoes back on and get out of here. And we got a lot of stuff coming up here next. We've got the pregame tease where Nelly comes back in and tells us what's going on in the full show. I can tell you right now, it's going to have a lot of Michael Vick. So stay tuned. You're listening to the Count Pointer Count pregame show on OSG Sports Radio, the World Internet Radio Network, and Podomatic.com. Stay tuned.
The egos on this show are larger than they appear. More OSG Sports Radio is coming up.
Have you made the O part of your morning? Or perhaps part of your game? Maybe an afternoon in? Or an hour in the gym? an elegant evening out, or a vacation somewhere far away. You'll save on thousands of products at Overstock.com, as well as books, business supplies, auctions, and travel. Make the O part of your life. Overstock.com. It's all about the O.
Welcome back to the Count Pointer Count pregame show here on OSG Sports Radio and the World Internet Radio Network. I'm bringing Nelly back in now to talk about today's Count Pointer Count. Now, Nelly, I kind of have an idea about where we're going to go, but people listening may not. Where are we starting today's Count Pointer Count?
J-Dub, I know it'll come as absolutely no surprise, but we're going to be spending a lot more time on the continuing saga of Seven and the stupendous summer Seven seems to put in front of himself. In the A, it's time for our normal discussion and checking out things in the round. And in the B, we have a bit of a square off. See how things are being covered in both cities. Greg Burton, friend of the show from WTVR-TV in Richmond, to get both sides of the equation there. C block, we focus on Portland State football, kind of getting away from all things Seven. And you sit there and go, why would you focus on Portland State football? Give you a couple of hints. Big belt buckles, cowboy hats, big sunglasses, a high-powered offense, and leaving credentials for dead folks. John Wilkerson takes a look at all things Jerry Glanville and Mouse Davis. Yes, they have resurfaced. D-Block, at least the start of things in the D for the pit stop, is life at the Brickyard. He is Tommy Palmer, and I think Tommy Palmer's with Poco this week. We'll figure out who he's with as we go. F-Troop Wilkerson comes back with a look at Nick the Quick, St. Nick, everything Crimson Tide. Nick Saban and how he's adjusting to life in Tuscaloosa. The G, well, we might be focusing on more Seven, but we could also be focusing on a crossroads in the National Basketball Association, officials affecting outcomes of games, not necessarily wins and losses, but the spread and what happens when you might get in trouble. H is Brian's place. It's his cell. I'm not going in, so it's whatever he wants. J-Dub, it's all yours.
Nelly, as always, thank you so much for shedding some light on today's show. And the show itself is coming up after this next commercial break, so stay tuned here to OSG Sports Radio for the full Count Pointer Count coming up after these messages. You're listening to OSG Sports Radio on the World Internet Radio Network and Podomatic.com. Pre-game show done.
Ever notice that every golf magazine, newspaper, and TV channel talks about the same old stuff? Want something new? Check out Golf Gear News. You'll find segments like The Component Corner,
Mythbusters,
Interview with the Guru,
Website Spotlight,
She Golfs Too,
Golf of the Week.
Golf Gear News, the show for great information you won't find anywhere else. www.golfgearcenter.blogspot.com.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
Coming to you from OSG Central Headquarters, wherever that is.
Mike do a lot of positive things in the neighborhood, but nobody step forward and bring those kind of things up.
It's time for Count Pointer Count.
I never had the emotional high of winning until I hold that push.
Do it.
Now, the host of Count Pointer Count, John Nelson.
She broke a needle, now she can't sell walking and all. I'm just a walking young dog. Well, if you don't know how to do it, I'll show you how to walk and dog.
A block now, Count Pointer Count, week 97 of the continuing saga of the Summer Seven.
Or at least the 2-month anniversary.
Yeah. So, you know, now that the feds aren't playing around, which we kind of figured they weren't going to play around, now the locals aren't playing around either after playing around.
The proper term would be piggybacking.
Yeah, no kidding. And he actually showed up earlier than he was supposed to get his picture taken. He was served and snuck in under the radar. How does this happen in this 24-hour information age that Seven sneaks in and gets his picture made?
Just like Paris Hilton. They got it down.
So
that would be a question for Brother Burton earlier in the show today.
You're just like, yay. Okay, dude, where were your news crews? So you think you're going to have the same kind of Paris Hilton walk on Thursday when he's leaving the courthouse from the Rocket Docket?
I think you're going to see, my guess is
free Vic t-shirts.
you'll be seeing a lot of cameras running after a mysterious black sedan.
Instead of black helicopters now, it's black sedans.
At least it's not a white Ford Bronco.
Ooh.
Wow.
Ooh.
Wow.
I was hoping we weren't going to go there.
Or no. Well, hey, well, it's a different kind of murder. Both yet unproven. But one's chasing golf courses and the other might be playing Nintendo or something. We haven't gotten there yet. Any revelations you guys think of what's going to happen on Thursday?
Bart?
Locally or in Richmond?
Richmond.
In Atlanta or Richmond?
Yeah, Richmond. I don't care about Atlanta.
In Richmond, I think they'll probably set the docket. They'll set a date. And
will it be sooner than we think or later than we think?
You know, that's a good question. For Michael Vick's sake, probably the sooner would be the better to try to get it adjudicated and find out, you know, if it's proven innocent or guilty.
Or is the sooner the better the worse because he wants to play football, and if it's a sooner case, then he's probably not going to be able to play.
Yeah, but if it's sooner, it also gets done before the football season is over, and this may very well be something that pops up in January or December. My guess with the holiday season is they're going to try and avoid that, so it's either going to be a pre-Thanksgiving or an after the first of the year
November
thing.
Book? November book, maybe?
Wouldn't that be interesting for all the TV folks out there?
So then what do you think is going to happen in Atlanta come beginning a training camp?
Boy, it could be really a zoo because Michael Vick won't be here on Thursday. They open up training camp Thursday, so Joey Harrington is going to be the number one guy at that particular point in time as we speak. And, I mean, the whole Mike Vick thing just overshadows everything. I mean, every teammate is going to get asked about this all the time.
Except his distant cousin Joey Harrington. Except for the distant cousin of Joey Harrington, Padraig Harrington, winning the British Open.
Distant cousin. The Harringtons are ruling the golf world right now.
I'm just totally not buying that, but we're deviating from the subject, too.
Well, yeah, that's the fun part of the show. So you think it could be a zoo come Thursday?
Absolutely.
Zoo, not a zoo.
Oh, it's going to be. It will be, but it won't be as bad as it would be if he shows up at camp at some point.
Friday?
Gut feeling tells me there will be some sort of a resolution to his status before they ever set foot on that Falcons facility up in Flowery Branch. They have to. I mean, it will be nonstop, uncontrolled chaos every single solitary day.
Unlike now?
It's not that uncontrolled, and it's not chaos.
So then how do you work practice? This was something we talked about off the air, Mark Harmon. Do you open practice? Do you close practice? Do you close practice for the sake of security? How do you handle it if you're the guys in the yellow jackets?
I think as much as Arthur Blank wants to cater to his fan base, I think just for sanity purposes, you close practice. You don't let anybody in. You can't have, you know, demonstrators in there disrupting practice. You know, better just to keep everybody out.
Not that they wouldn't
concentrate as much as you can on football.
Not that they won't be distracting things outside the fences.
Yeah, you're
with protests and roadblocks and Georgia State Patrol and everybody.
And the whole nine yards. It's just it's going to be a mess. Based on the picketing and the protesters we've seen already at Nike headquarters in Oregon, at the NFL headquarters in New York, there will be picketers. There won't be a massive throng of humanity there protesting. You'll get 25 to 50 people standing outside holding signs
with their dogs,
doing whatever it is that they do. And if I see this playing out with forcing him to take a leave of absence, and it's one of those things, if they do that, it will die off. It will not be the nonstop squeeze box media circus every day if he's not there.
As dog owners, how do you guys perceive this entire situation? We got about 2 minutes left before we toss to the Terpstra update. But as dog owners, look at this from a dog owner point of view and not a member of the media. What do you guys think about this?
Well, you know, Mike Vick is innocent till proven guilty, but if they're dog fighters out there, it's a sick bunch of puppies. I mean, those guys, you know, it's the scum of the earth that are involved in this kind of stuff. And, you know, I've had dogs all my life, and, you know, if one of them, steps on a thorn, it's heartbreaking, you know. You got to get them fixed. And to have...
Don't ever say fixed to a dog.
What goes on... My dog's not, but what goes on, you know, at dog fights is really pretty disgusting.
I would agree with him. There is no rational justification for putting up dogs to fight against each other like that and treating them like the way that these guys have been alleged to do. And whether Mike Vick's actually connected to it, attached to it, or done it, if he hasn't, other people have. And those people should be locked up and punished. And that's the whole point of this whole issue. It's an illegal activity. It's illegal for a reason.
Here's your local update on things, all things Richmond. Patrick Terpstra from our friends at WVEC-TV and WVEC.com catches up with Surrey County Sheriff Harold Brown and what we like to call in the business, men on the street.
We begin with 13 News reporter in Surrey County, Patrick Terpstra. Patrick, the local case is likely to look a little different from the federal case.
That's right, Regina. The Commonwealth's attorney told me that his focus is going to be more on just dog fighting and alleged dog killing. The feds are dealing with some other issues, the entire dog fighting operation as a business and the interstate transport of dogs. Gerald Poindexter saying he's not interested in what the feds are dealing with, which is exactly what has Michael Vick in court in Richmond next week. A horde of reporters waiting for Michael Vick outside a Richmond federal courthouse are a week early. Vick and three others indicted on dogfighting charges must appear for mugshots and fingerprints next week. And Vick may have a Surrey County court date in his future.
Investigation is still ongoing, and we're still cooperating with the feds. They're cooperating with us.
Surrey's parallel investigation was emboldened by the federal indictments, says the sheriff.
Didn't change anything. This maybe added something to ours, but they've got a little more as far as forensics, and we're probably going to be able to use their forensic.
The sheriff says his investigation is focusing on the same four people, including Vick.
Michael Vick, will he be indicted by Surrey County?
That I can't say right now.
In Surrey, Vick dominates the talk at Surrey Ford, where everyone has an opinion.
It's a shame that people like this got so much, and then they come along and do these silly things that backs them up. You know what I mean? That keeps their hands cuffed.
Back now live in Surrey County, where you can see one lone dog crate in Michael Vick's front yard. Neighbors telling me that they have not seen the NFL star in quite some time, or really anyone over here at this property. We're live tonight in Surrey County. Patrick Terpstra, 13 News.
Got about a minute left before we send it to break and come back with Greg Burton from WTVR and me debating the merits of this case. Is this the story of the era in sports, or the decade?
Oh, I don't think it's the story of the decade. It's one of the strangest stories of the NFL, I think. You could say that, but I mean, there's been weird stories in sports.
Let me, because you have like OJ as the story of that decade. Is Vick the story of this decade?
Well, you know, you got Barry Bonds and the whole, you know, steroid investigation. You know, that's been predominating for years now. This is just kind of in its genesis mode. So, you know, it's really hard to tell.
It remains to be seen. I mean, there's still three more years left in this decade. Who knows what's going to happen in that period of time?
Yeah, like a court case.
Is it a big story? Absolutely. Is it the biggest? Maybe, maybe not. It's certainly a big national story, and it's certainly one that's going to get some headlines here for the next several weeks.
Mark Harmon, CBS 46. He will be back later on in the kitchen stink Stewart sink.
Hey, you said it.
Yeah, because I had to think about it. And Action Phil will be back a little later on as well. And we're going to suspend normal rules in the G Block because there's entirely too much going on. B Block, when we return, J-Dub, myself, and Greg Burton from WTVR-TV in Richmond talk about all things Richmond and all things Atlanta when it comes to media coverage of the continuing saga of the Summer of 7 when OSG Sports Radio and Camp Horner Count rolls on after this.
I did pretty good titling that, didn't I?
Why, Jimmy? Why are you still not renting your movies from the Netflix? Come here, sit down. It's easy. Make a list of movies you want to see and get your first DVDs in the mail in about one business day.
Oh, it is easy.
Shut up. Keep them as long as you want. Send one back in a prepaid envelope, and they automatically mail another from your list. Late fees? Forget about it.
No late fees.
Shut up.
There's a movie waiting for you at home. Netflix. All the DVDs you want, starting at only $9.99 a month.
Welcome Welcome back to the B Block of Count Pointer Count here on OSG Sports Radio and the World Internet Radio Network. I'm Brother J-Dub, and the B Block, as always, stands for Blakeney, www.blakeney, BLAKENEY.com. Why is that, boys?
He's a rental for you because he belongs to us. Greg hasn't been on the show enough to know that line, but that's the line we always use.
Yeah, and that's the first time I've had a chance to do it, so I'm a little excited. But we're going to continue on with the continuing saga of the Summer of Seven. As we heard in the A Block, kind of the nuts and bolts of the story. But joining us now in the B Block, I've got Nelly coming back, but bringing in Greg Burton, media whore from Richmond, Virginia. How are you, Burton?
Great. Another punch in my OSG card.
Hey, pretty soon you can get a free T-shirt. How about that?
I'm looking forward to it.
But we're going to continue talking about Vic and how he's being handled by the media, and we're going to bring in Burton to talk about how TVR and other people in Richmond are handling the Vic story, and Nelly's going to be talking about how Atlanta's media is handling the story. And first, Burton, if you would go ahead and give us an update on what's going on with Vic in Richmond now heading into his court date this Thursday.
Well, the media troops are mobilizing for Thursday, which is when Vic will be in court, and we thought it would be his first appearance in court, but somehow, someway, it was revealed on Saturday that Vic actually slipped into the courthouse in Richmond on Thursday to officially receive his federal summons, signed it, had his mugshot taken, and was fingerprinted. And, you know, I think the media kind of let their guard down because they were under the impression that Vic was not going to show up until next week for his arraignment and preliminary hearing. So it was kind of a surprise that Vic got in undetected last Thursday. I can assure you that won't happen this Thursday coming, because we anticipate quite a media throng. Obviously, Vic has always been a big figure throughout the state, but now, you know, he's a national figure, and all the boys from Atlanta, you know, I know that we've gotten calls from people, you know, pretty much between Richmond and Atlanta, and even D.C., saying, hey, we want to come down, hey, can you help us out? That's kind of the way things go on these big stories. And it's going to be a circus, to be quite honest.
Yeah, Burton, I heard that the federal courthouse is actually going to have overflow rooms for the media that's going to be there with a video pool feed for this thing.
Yeah, they'll have basically, they're going to hold the arraignment. He'll go in for his arraignment, and then he'll go in for a preliminary hearing with Judge Henry Hudson, who, it's already been brought up in the media, is a very stern, tough, yet fair jurist. You know, I'm sure you've heard stories about the Richmond Circuit Federal Court here, known as the Rocket Docket. Things move pretty quickly, more than any other federal court in the country. But they're going to hold the hearings in the largest courtroom, but that's not going to be able to hold all of the people that are going to be interested in this. You know, I know that we've already hired a sketch artist. I don't know if cameras are going to be even allowed in the courtroom. That'll all be determined in the next few days. But this has the potential, as I'm sure Nelly will tell us, to be, I hate to overstate, but that's what we do in the media, maybe the story of the decade. If Michael Vick is sent to jail, that's like the story of the decade.
Without question.
Well, talking about the Atlanta reaction, Nelly, you know, his first day in court, Thursday, he should be on the field at Flowery Branch in first day of training camp. How is Atlanta handling this, and do you think that that date was just one big conspiracy?
I think that there are some black helicopter folks out there that think that the days were meant to be somewhat similar, but, you know, the only person that can really answer that is the judge and the folks up there in the Eastern District Courthouse. There is a lot of irony that seems to ooze from that particular date, but, you know, you're going to have the news crews in the number 9 market split to the four winds. You're going to have them assaulting Greg in the town of Richmond to no end. You're going to have probably practically every news organization that's anywhere close to Atlanta up in Richmond, and at the same time devoting a lot of resources to life in Flowery Branch at the practice complex. And the thing that a lot of folks may not know is that only the sports entities were allowed into the Falcons complex last week. If a news team wanted to go in to cover the continuing saga of the Summer of Seven, they identified themselves at the gate, and they were turned around. Live trucks were turned around if they were news involved. Live trucks, period, were turned around, and only the sports people were allowed into the complex. And so you combine that with the protests that might be showing up, and this has all of the makings of a free-for-all on a bunch of different levels.
Now, yeah, PETA, you're talking about protests. PETA's doing the whole Sack Vic campaign and have vowed to be at every Vic appearance as long as he's still a member of the Falcons and the NFL, vowing that they need to do something now. Burton, have you noticed any kind of media issues in Richmond and Surrey County as far as sport versus news versus sports and access to his property or anything else?
I know that the guys down in Newport News and Norfolk and Hampton Roads area had his mom's house staked out there Wednesday when this whole story went down. There's a great story that came out about Marcus Vic, the beloved younger brother of Michael, and he got into it with one of the local reporters down there in Norfolk and called him a cracker. So it's always good to see that Marcus is. Brought his A game for this media circus that's coming up. But I think what you're going to see is, it's funny that Vic is just. I mean, it's like a Where's Waldo scenario. I can't believe that Vic is. Been able to stay, in hiding this long, and so it's kind of got the media chomping at the bit. But we've got a couple of things going on here in Richmond. Wednesday night is the annual Richmond Hokie Club dinner. There's going to be 1,400 Hokies at the Richmond Convention Center Wednesday night. Frank Beamer will be here, a few of his coaches. Kirk Herbstreit is the guest speaker, and there's definitely going to be a cloud over that. I mean. There's debate as to how much this reflects on Virginia Tech. Bottom line, he's the most famous Hokie ever, with all due respect to Bruce Smith. Vic is the most famous Hokie ever, and I'm sure we'll be out there Wednesday night kind of asking all these, loyal Hokie fans how they feel about what's going to transpire the following day.
Well, talking about reflections on players and teammates of Michael Vick, I'm going to bring in a soundbite now from Joe Horn, a brand new Atlanta Falcon teammate of Michael Vick. He appeared on the Dan Patrick Show with guest anchor Bob Valvano, and he had to say a few words about Michael Vick being convicted already in the media.
To shed some light on this, let's go to somebody who is a teammate of Mike Vick's, and that is one of the newest members of the Atlanta Falcons, Joe Horn, who joins us now via the OnStar hotline here on ESPN Radio. Joe, how difficult has it been getting acclimated to a new team with a new coach, given everything that's going on right now?
Well, I'm an 11-year veteran, number one, so getting acclimated to the team wasn't a problem at all. The situation that's happening with Mike right now, no one's immune to the trials and tribulations of life. I've always stated that whenever problems do arise. Unfortunately, it's happening for Michael Vick right now. He's very saddened by it. I talk to him every day. I'm going to meet with him Monday. We're going to go sit down and have dinner. And he's saddened by the attention that he knows is going to cause his team. But it is what it is. And I tell Mike, hey, let's go through the due process. Let's wait and see when the chips fall what happens. So, because right now in the media, and everywhere else on the Nasty Grace Show and everywhere else, he's already convicted. And it's like that's what they want him to be. They want him to be convicted. And that's not how this country works. You're innocent until proven guilty. We can talk about it for the next 24 hours. That's how it's gonna come down. And I tell Mike to keep his head up. I'm behind him. I'm backing him. I believe in him, and the football team did too.
Joe, let me ask you this, though. If it got to a point, and I understand what you're saying is absolutely very valid, there's been no conviction, it's very early in the process, the legal process to go forward. But at some point, if you looked at it and said, I got to be honest, I think it would be better for our football team if he stepped away for a little bit, would you give him that advice?
No. As a matter of fact, I asked him not to.
No,
why not? Because number one, you have to know Michael Vick. This stepping away from the football team is not going to help him personally. It's going to keep him thinking about what's going on. And he stated to me that he wanted to be around his family, his football family. That's not the only way, but that's a good way for him to be involved around the guys and getting his other stuff off of his mind. He wants to play football. And guess what? I don't want him to play just because he's Michael Vick and he'll help us win football games. I want him to play because he wants to play. He wants to be around the football team. And I ask him not to step away.
Now, Nelly, looking at what Joe Horn just said, do you, as a two-part question, one, do you actually think that the media wants him convicted in the court of public opinion? And two, do you think that it would be a good idea for him to step away for a year?
Well, I think Nancy Grace, for referencing Joe Horn, is spending more time on the Chris Benoit tragedy than they are with Michael Vick at the moment. And I hate to break it to Joe Horn, but it's not about Mike Vick. It's about a bunch of different things on a bunch of different levels. It's about public perception. It's about an owner that who has pretty much apparently been lied to by his star quarterback. No, I'm not involved. No, I'm not involved. Oops, I'm involved. And it's about how a team can function with protests at practically every stop along the line, protests at practice, and having to deal with a bunch of crap that is bigger than the situation. It's not about an individual who wants to play a game. You got to step aside if things are going to function. And Greg, I mean, it's a selfish act to sit there and say, I want to play football when you have to impact hundreds of other people.
Michael Vick forfeited his right to do what he wants to do. Okay? Michael Vick, I could care less what Mike wants to do. Mike put himself in this situation. Mike surrounded himself with a bunch of knuckleheads. And asked Joe Horn, who, by the way, is anybody wondering why Joe Horn is speaking for the Atlanta Falcons? He's been with that team, what, 12 minutes? And suddenly he knows all the inner workings of Michael Vick's personality? Joe Horn needs to shut the hell up, okay? Worry about not dropping touchdown passes. And ask Joe Horn if those dogs got due process. That's what Joe Horn needs to worry about.
Okay, at this point in time, what is the Jolly Roger worrying about? What can we expect for Roger Goodell to do in light of all of this new information?
I think he's just got to drop the hammer and get it over with. I think that when things happen to this magnitude, you have to make a stand. You have to make a statement. He's already had protesters on his doorstep, and he knows that he has to know that it's the beginning of something a lot larger than a lot of us. And when you have athletes on teams who were initially asked about this whole thing, Joe Horn, and I'm referencing Joe Horn here, when he was asked if he would trust his quarterback to the end, if it would be an individual that he would want his sons to look up to, and Joe Horn said yes, that speaks to bigger issues and bigger problems. He's got to make a stand now.
Hey, Burton, if Jolly Roger does not suspend Vic, do you think Arthur Blank should do so?
Yeah, I actually think, and I mean, Nelly can maybe speak better, but I think the Falcons are going to be the one. I can't imagine he's going to be in training camp. I just can't imagine if this, that regardless, I mean, it may be the rocket talking, but this thing's not going to get solved in the next 2 weeks. There's no way he could play football. That would look so bad for the Falcons. So I think they're going to press Vic either to step aside or then they will force him to step aside and maybe take it out of the NFL's hands. I think the NFL will say, okay, if you don't handle this, then we will, and it will look really bad. One other thing, too, I mean, just on the seriousness of this, this is something that's kind of come up over the last 48 hours, is when you look at that federal indictment and look at the 30 people along with Vic that were charged, none of them are related to Michael Vick. This whole thing came about when his cousin, Devon Bodie, was busted on drug charges at the house on Moonlight Road. That's how they found all the dogfighting paraphernalia. Is Devon Bodie's name on that indictment? It is not. Which leads you to believe that his cousin, Mike Vick's cousin, flipped on him. He's in a world of trouble. He is staring at jail. And they're worried about whether he should run or pass. I just does not make any sense. I think Arthur Blank's a smart guy, and he'll get it right.
Now, one thing to talk about this, Nelly, you can probably reference this a little better as well. Remember back with Tampa Bay and the Keyshawn Johnson mess with John Gruden? He was, you know, kind of put inactive. He was paid for a short break, shall we say, leave of absence. Rich McKay was the GM of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the time. Rich McKay is currently the GM of the Atlanta Falcons. Do you think Rich McKay has set a precedent that he's going to be following down that same road with Michael Vick?
I think that this is the equivalent of telling somebody to go sit in a corner. You have the best analogy I can come up with is when a cop is involved in a shooting in public. What do? When the investigation goes on, they sit him at a desk until the investigation is over with pay. And probably that's the safest thing that you can do, is some kind of equivalent of paid leave of absence or something like that. Put him at a desk, have him shuffle paper, have him go work in the mailroom or whatever, just to make sure that things go down the right way. Because, Greg, I can't think of anything else that you can do that can satisfy all of the sides in this particular equation.
I agree with you. I love that analogy about the cop. that's involved in a shooting. I mean, you need to figure out, was it justified or not? So I'm all for, you know, due process and the person getting their day in court. But, I mean, read the indictment, you know, for all these people that want to come to the defense. And I'll just tell you, other than Joe Warren, there haven't been very many people. Oh, I'm sorry, Emmett Smith. Another genius, another rocket scientist. They should have not enshrined him in the Hall of Fame yesterday for the ridiculous comments he made trying to defend Michael Vick. But most people, all you have to do is read the indictment or read snippets of the indictment and find out this is some serious, serious business. And I just can't imagine Vick going out there and, you know, running, you know, Z Route Go 26 on cue, you know, worrying about football plays when his life, as he knows it, could be over.
Well, speaking of over, this segment is now over. You've been listening to the B Block here on Count Point Account. Speaking of the indictment, you can go to onlinesportsguys.com and read the entire indictment on our website. Feel free to go there, and we'll also be keeping you updated on the story as well. Joining us in the B Block today has been TVR sports anchor Greg Burton. Greg, thanks for joining us again on the show.
Thanks, J-Dub.
And Nelly, thanks again for hanging out with us. We'll see you again in the G Block.
You got it.
Coming up in the C Block, we've got Portland State and the new head coach, the Vikings. You're listening to Count Point Account here on OSG Sports Radio and the World Internet Radio Network. Stay tuned.